episodes from something pretty, pretty dope.
Blog Talk yeah. Radio.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is...
What? My name is...
Dr. Dre.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sir Robert Ford.
Okay, we get it. Start the show.
Sports with the 12th man. Our post-Thanksgiving edition is officially here. We got a lot of things to discuss, and Thanksgiving is over. I'm still thankful for a lot of things. You know, I mean, I guess I do all right. I don't get like shout-outs like I'm the goat or anything like that. But I do want to say that literally we have 594 episodes on the books. Just letting you guys know, so we are 6 episodes from 600 episodes that we've been doing this, you know, so it's just been it's a credit to, you know, just Rob, thank you for keeping it going, man, since we were going since, what, almost 13 years, sure. It feels like, and we convinced JQ to come on board, and JQ's been amazing, and then we got Gary, and then Curtis, even though obviously he's passed, but just we just kept it going, too, so it's been a journey, you know, obviously. Bigger and better things, hope for the future as we get better, we evolve. And,
Curtis is with me always.
Yeah.
There we go.
That's amazing. So we appreciate that too. So, just a lot of things to get this party started. And without further ado, good seeing you gentlemen. And let's check in. JQ, I'm just happy that you are okay. And, you know, how are you, my guy?
Man, if I didn't have fantasy football, I wouldn't have nothing at all, man. Lost Joe Burrow. Big season's over. Moved to Michigan the goddamn game. College football season is over for all intents and purposes as far as some chaos. So, yeah,
not
man,
funny.
I'm
Never know.
Yeah, you never know, but it's not looking great. So, I'm over here licking my wounds, man, trying to, you know, keep it pushing forward. So, it is what it is. Gotta love it as a fan. The lows and the highs, they gotta deal with them.
Stay dignified, my friend.
Throw my Lakers sweatshirt on for y'all today.
Yeah.
There it is.
That's the thing about sports. Even in the NFL, man, all 32 fan bases believe their team should win the Super Bowl.
But no, not all of them.
And then the 31 teams that don't win it, they think they should fire their coach.
Because Carolina, Chicago, damn sure knew that they weren't going to make it. Listen, I don't know if y'all watched the first
Arizona?
Take. Russo is
Arizona.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
He went completely off on the NFL today for putting Chicago on primetime 5 times. That was hilarious.
Mm-hmm. I'll bet there's at least 20 of the teams that really believe that, though, each year.
I give you 20. I won't give you 32,
yeah.
though. Because some fans, when they are real fans, they know.
No, basically,
we'll have fun at the games or whatever, but
they
know.
The team should win it, but if they don't, everybody needs to be fired.
Fire everybody.
These fans comment.
Hey, I've been there.
Buddy of mine.
Believe me.
A good buddy of mine. Is a Eagles fan, and I was with him today a good bit for work, and he's an Eagles fan, and he was blasting the Eagles offensive coordinator on Facebook this past Sunday. And I'm like, dude, you're 2-10-1. You scored 30-some points in the game.
Yeah, they just – well, Phil, I told you, that I-95 coordinator.
Philly's weird like
offense,
that.
They're special.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're not happy with anything. They even wreck their city if they win something, you know. Come on.
That's true.
He said, man, we got too many close wins this year. I was like, dude, you know, if you win, if you beat the worst team in the NFL by 1 point, that's a good win.
Yeah, I told you, man. It's something in the currents on the Atlantic Ocean off of I-95 between D.C. and Boston. Those are some special people in the world. They're special. Mm-hmm. And I got friends from that area, and I told it to their face. Like, y'all are crazy. You know, it's just only. Y'all are crazy.
Philly, yeah, they got some problems. Philly City of Brother Love My Ass. I've been up there a couple times. It is not that at all, man. It's like,
it ain't just Philly. D.C., Philadelphia, New York, all of New Jersey, Boston.
Mm-hmm.
Those MFs are nuts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I was going to say, and you got a friend that's a Jets fan too, right, JQ? Because same thing, I got a buddy, a Jets fan. He was like, got Aaron Rodgers, we won the Super Bowl. Then, you know, he was crushed. I was like, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I was like,
he's
yeah,
all bad. Listen, watching a Jets game with him is pure comedy with Zach Wilson. He gets so mad. It just loses it.
Pure comedy. Shit like, ah,
oh, hot.
Man.
Super hot.
Oh, man. Woo! But anyway, we started on fire, family and friends, and, you know, obviously America. So that was just the accused right part. So, Ford, how are you feeling this evening, my guy?
Oh, man. Feeling good, man. I had a chance to go down to New Orleans for work yesterday and today. So nothing like going to your hometown for work. And went to Redfish Grill last night, had a hickory grill, redfish, barbecue oysters, and double chocolate bread pudding. They had fried green tomato and shrimp po' boy. No asparagus.
How's your body? You going through results over there? You okay? You good, man?
I'll be good. You know, you got to break mix it up sometime. I'll be back on it tomorrow.
Oh, my God. All right. Gary, save us, man. What you got?
I can't. Man, I saw those. You sent us a picture of those barbecued oysters and just took me back, Rob. Took me back.
I was being nice. I thought of sending y'all a picture of the hickory grill redfish, too, but I was being nice.
Oh, man, you should have.
Really good stuff.
You should have.
Yeah, good stuff, man.
I'm doing well.
Yeah.
Doing well.
Good stuff. I see you repping the Cowboys.
Hey, it's cold down here in Florida right now. It was 30 degrees at my house last night.
Ooh.
Man.
That's not fair.
Mm-hmm. It's about 34 here in Atlanta right now.
Yeah, it's not warm
up there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's all good. Hey, again, we want to tell you once again the sponsor for this week. Once again, it's Gary Chandeliers. If you ever need a chandelier, make sure that you go to Gary. He will take care of you and make sure that your chandelier is in tip-top condition. So, again, Gary Chandeliers is our sponsor for this week's edition of Talking Sports.
He rocking that fresh cowboy sweatshirt today. Boy, he must have got that for a Cyber Monday and got it to Express. Well, I see you, Gary.
No, this is an old one, actually.
We are good.
I
it's
see
just
you.
Been
stand up,
Gary. Hot to wear it any other day, you know.
Hey, not
at least since
sure.
I've been down here, you know.
It's funny. If your team wins, then you get to rep the gear. So the Falcons won, so hey, they get rep today. You know, obviously, again, I tried to coordinate with the hat. I just like the hat, man. It's a green hat, man. So, again, that's the next. Maybe the wifey will get me a matching, you know, Falcon hat. I'll put that on my wish list here if I'm good. But it is amazing, gentlemen. So really quickly, I'm gonna throw out the numbers for the show. I did do a quick shout-out to Naj with some happy Thanksgiving, so he may call in as well. So shout-out to Naj. Hopefully he connects with us. I know he's been a little crazy busy from what on the third shift. So, again, just wanted to give him a quick shout-out. But 424-243-9519 is always a number. Follow us on X at the number 12, THMESports, and Facebook.com/TalkingSports for the 12th Man of 12th Man Sports. You'll find us there. We post everything. Rob has posted the top 60 prospects again. We'll talk about that and a lot of other things for this edition. So let's get it. We're going to talk some baseball talk here. There's a couple of moving pieces here. And we're going to talk about Ohtani. Yeah, that's the biggest name out there right now. There's rumors of, what, a $500 million, $600 million contract. There's been a lot of teams dropping.
Wow.
I've been seeing, you know, that, you know, and again, it's funny because some teams have dropped out. And we'll talk, Rob, because I think I want to make sure that it seemed like the Dodgers were the favorites. I had some notes about the Cubs making some noise. The Giants are in position. You know, it looks like the Yankees have kind of backed out. I think they're kind of looking for the other pitcher, Soto and Yamamoto.
Yep.
And the Dodgers are long shots. You know, again, I'm kind of hoping. And you got to remember, he's not going to even pitch one into 2024 because of his surgery, because of the that UNL surgery that he had. But he's going to be a great, obviously batter. So who wants the best value? Are the Red Sox? I know you hate to say that. Yes, Yankees fans, are they kind of a long shot? They want to make a big move, big splash. The Mariners, I thought they were like, yo, we got to go into this guy. But I don't know why you go to the Mariners. He just wanted just to kind of have whatever. But they are a long shot from doing anything.
Agent market.
Those are some interesting. Asia, yeah. But, I know. So you're thinking, obviously with
the word on the street, he loves Seattle, too.
King Griffey. I was a huge fan of that. I was a huge fan of, oh, my God. I can't think of his name now. Oh, my God. It's a great, great batter. I can't think of his name now. Was it Ichiro?
Ichiro.
Ichiro. Yeah, that was my guy, too. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So you got to remember all that, that history, too. So, Rob, go ahead. I'm kind of thinking from there, too. That's kind of what I was looking at as far as some rumors, as far as his destinations.
I think you covered it. From everything we're hearing, the Dodgers are still a favorite. He gets to stay in the Los Angeles market, right? And, Los Angeles also has a huge Asian influence as well. You mentioned that Seattle is still in the running. All indications are the Yankees have dropped out and making their focus. Juan Soto trying to work out a trade with the Padres. And Yamamoto, get a Japanese pitcher as well. So the Yankees seem to be focusing on those two and have dropped out of their Ohtani sweepstakes. But as you mentioned, the Cubs are going hard. The Giants are going hard. The Mariners, Mets, and Red Sox are still all going hard.
Mets are too.
Ohtani. But all indications seem to be that the Dodgers are the team to beat for them. They have deep pockets as well. And he gets to stay in a huge market, in the Los Angeles market, which all indications is that he still loves that area.
Yeah, that's what I was reading today as well. That, he loves the area. Other teams are making a play for him, but it's just, may drive up his price a little bit, but the Dodgers can afford it. So I think they're the team that's going to probably end up with him. And I think that's probably why the Yankees backed away from that as well. Not necessarily for the money, but focus somewhere else, Although I would love to see him in a Yankee uniform.
I just don't want to see him go to the Braves because that would be unfair. I heard that scuttlebutt in the beginning. I said, if you put him in the middle of that Braves lineup, good Lord have mercy. But I think they've also dropped out of it a little bit as well, which is a good thing because the Braves would be damn near unstoppable if they had. They could have us pitching their rotation with that lineup and still win 100 games. So, I think he wants to stay on the West Coast. That's a quick – no, it's not quick, but it's a shorter flight back to the homeland there, Japan for him to stay there, like you said. A large Asian market out there on the West Coast. So I think that's where he's going to be most comfortable, right, staying there. That's why I wouldn't discount the Giants either in that. But, again, the Dodgers and the money they have, good luck.
Mm-hmm.
That's tough, JQ.
Direct flight back home means a lot to someone, like that.
Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. I kind of struggle with that.
Believe it or not,
Seattle
would be the shortest flight going to Japan.
It would.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah,
I was going to say, I do struggle with him coming to the Braves.
Good.
Yeah, I struggle with the Braves, JQ, because we need pitching, man. I mean, I'd love for him to be able to pitch for us, so right now we need pitching bad, man. So it's
shitting
tough,
me? You can go around and just have some B and C level free agents in the pitching market. That lineup, man, you're going to score 8 runs a game. You ain't got to go get nobody to really shut you down when you got with that lineup. All you need is two of them going at the same time. You get him in that lineup, good luck. Get through that lineup 3.5 times a game. Good luck.
They need the pitching for the playoffs, though. That's when they need it. And that's the
tough one. I'm like, whoo. Because we just had
they can win 100 games with that lineup in the regular season, but in playoffs, you need that lineup and some good pitching.
Shouldn't me. I want to see somebody try out 2 or 3 dudes in a row. On 2 days rest, 3 days rest, and get them out in a 7-game series. I, if it happens, I would get on here and say I was wrong. But that lineup, I mean, I know pitching travels. Don't get me wrong. But that lineup would have been crazy. I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I'm just saying that lineup would be unfair.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of like you, man. Mm-hmm. I was like, that's definitely like, you know, a wishful thing. Like, man, that'd be great. You think about, you know, have him DHing and some of that. That'd be insane, you know, obviously. But I do worry about the pitching, you know, because I'm like, man, you know, because when he ran to the Phillies and we were like, oh, we should be – That was not what we needed right there.
But what you missed is, though, perfect. What you missed in that equation is if I'm a free agent pitcher and I'm a tier two or tier three pitcher, or maybe even a bottom of the tier one pitcher, they get Ohtani in that lineup. How many pitchers say, I'll take a shortened deal, right, with a little bit less money to go with that lineup and try to win a championship? Because, like, all I got to do is a little bit because they're going to carry out the weight. So you can never discount that fact that a pitcher might say, damn, I don't have to be perfect with that lineup behind me. So,
that's true, too. Yeah, I mean, like I said, I'm not arguing that point at all. So I'm like, man, please make it happen. And I'll some way out of it anyway. But,
please, hell no. I'm going to move.
Yeah, hell yes. Hell yes. Move and so that. But I am an Angels fan. I'm a fan of Ron Washington because I think the Braves didn't do him that well, Ron Washington, the third base coach. But that's one of the conversations. But, you know, again, I can kind of see where you're going with that too, JQ. But it's all good. The Yankees, you know, Juan Soto, is he a possibility? I'm going to throw this over to Gary and to Rob about this, too, because obviously if they've kind of pushed back from the, you know, from the Ohtani sweepstakes, and you're hearing that looking at, again, Yamamoto, the pitcher, and then looking at, you know, Juan Soto. So is this a good move for the Yankees?
Oh, absolutely be a good move. When you look at the Yankees last 2 years, man, you struggled to hit. And other than Aaron Judge, I mean, you really struggled at the plate. And that lineup is getting old, man. We got guys in the lineup 60 years old, you know, coming up to bat, man. So, I mean, we got to get younger.
Young guys
we got to
like
get
that?
Faster. Yeah. I mean, we got to get younger, and we got to get some more speed on that team. I mean, that it's just an old and slow ball club. And then getting Juan Soto, the Padres want to get rid of payroll, I should say. And obviously, so they're in talks right now to just working on what the agreement will look like and what can the Yankees send them that, you know, the Padres will be accept. But negotiations are already in place to trade Juan Soto to the Yankees. So hopefully they can make that happen without giving up a whole lot of young assets because we need some of our – we need our young players on that team.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say is, as old as our club is, Rob, we don't want to – give up a lot of these young players, but you're going to have to give up something. I'm not sure what their talks are, who they're looking at giving up, but we got to get younger. We got to get younger quicker because it's not going to get any better for us if we don't. One player is not enough.
Nope. Absolutely. Well, yep. Yeah, I agree. They can't stop with Juan Soto. We're going to need more than that.
Well, the thing about it is, though, is that I read that the Padres actually also had to take out a loan, a debt loan, because that payroll had gotten so big that they are kind of bleeding money a little bit. So I don't know if you have to necessarily give up as much young talent as you think, because I think the Padres are just trying to get out from underneath that contract, given, you know, the other contracts they currently have on that payroll. So it may be a little bit of a we'll take some of it, but it is also a salary dump. But you don't want to give Juan to go away, so I hear what you're saying. But I don't want to be in where the Padres are and the other teams knowing where they are because, you know, the other owners know whether that owner is broke and struggling with money, right? I'm not going to give you all this because I'll take his contract. You need that more than anything else. Who else outside of really a big market team like the Yankees can absorb that contract and not really bat an eye, right? So it depends. Unless you get some dark horse team that's willing to, you know, mortgage the farm system for Soto. My only concern about Soto is in New York is about some of his personality. If he goes through a week of a slump and the Yankees fans get on him, he's a little thin-skinned, right? You know, he's real hot-tempered. You know how it is playing New York. Playing New York is a different thing. And if you aren't consistent with the hitting and they get on you, how does he handle it given how mercurial he is? So I'm not saying talent-wise he's not worth it because he definitely is. But I would worry about him in that market if he goes through some ups and downs. How does he handle those downs playing under that microscope in New York?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, and that's a good point, JQ, because it takes – not only does it take talent to play in those, you know, whether it's L.A. or New York, you know, but we're talking about New York right now.
Particularly in New
York,
it
takes talent, but it also takes some thick skin because – and some mental toughness. And if you, you know, if you're thin skinned and you're, you know, listening to the media and listening to the fans at a restaurant screaming at you or whatever, man, that can be rough for some of these guys that can't handle it. So I have some concerns about that.
Good stuff. Talk about your rival, the Mets, getting, who's his name, Luis Severino? What's his name? Yeah, he's from the Mets.
Luis
Talk about
Severino.
That.
Yeah.
Severino.
Yeah.
I mean, he got him.
See, if he pitches like he did last year in New York, I'll say take him.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, his ERA was up to about 7 this past year. Now, he had some really good years prior to this past year, so the Mets are hoping maybe he can get back to that level. But, I mean, they gave him a 1-year, $13 million deal. But this past year, as JQ mentioned, yeah, he was not good this past year with an ERA close to 7. So the Mets are hoping they can get the Luis Severino from a few years ago. So we'll see what happens there.
Sucky had a big win over Miami, so let's talk about that one. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was expected, you know, the ACC-SEC challenge just started a couple of nights ago and some really good matchups. And that was supposed to be a really close game. I mean, what people were expecting that to be a really close matchup. But, man, Kentucky and that young team, man, Reed Shepard, I mean, they got 5 top-notch recruits, and he was the 5th lowest out of the recruits. And he's turning out to be the best player. 21 points last night, shooting the ball extremely well. I think he had about 3 or 4 steals in the game as well. So Kentucky was really impressive on last night. Got a tippy hat to him. And John Calipari looks like he might have a team that can contend for the Final Four again. And going into the season, we didn't quite know what to expect from this young team. But just off the surface, to the start of the season, they look like a team that can possibly compete to get to the Final Four and a clear-cut SEC favorite.
Well, he did fill that stat line that Shepard did. 21 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 steals, and a block.
Yeah.
Plus minus was off the chain as well. I mean, good showing.
Yeah.
Hell of a showing.
He was the lowest rated recruit that they signed too, so he's turning out to be the best player so far.
Imagine that. Calipari. Right, like sometimes it takes that guy, and you keep getting those top notch guys, and then sometimes it works out. But then he's had a lull here, you know, in the past couple of seasons. So you know, I'm not a huge Calipari fan, but I do enjoy the he tells those dudes real about like I'm trying to get you to the NBA, and that's my goal for you. So come here for that. So you know, I give him credit for being honest with him. But yeah, that was supposed to be a game. I just got thought guys disinterested. I said, damn, this is just a whole ass whooping. So. You know, but I don't know. I just don't – I've gotten to the point now with him where I don't trust Calipari not to rub him the wrong way, run him into the ground too hard, you know what I'm saying, do something to mess it up for himself. But, yeah, that's definitely a good showing. And these are the kind of wins that decide being a 1 or a 2 seed or a 2 and a 3 seed. When we come back and we look at it in March and with Selection Sunday and what the committee looks at, and they say, well, these differential factors, so – you know, we say it's early in the season, but you get a lot of these marquee games early in the season. These are the ones that make the difference between that 1 to 2 to the 3 line come March.
Yep.
So good on him for a big victory.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just proud that Georgia State came back and beat Mississippi State after that ass whipping by the Bearcats. So we got whipped, and they didn't think that we were going to even be in that game. So we actually pulled it out versus the Bulldogs of Mississippi State, and you know, and we were closer in the Georgia game too, so we didn't get our ass kicked too bad. At least we're in the game too, so I'm just happy about we represented too. So that's a little side note too, man. So hey Rob,
it's amazing that neither Georgia Tech or Georgia is good in college basketball right now, because man, there is so much high school basketball talent in the state of Georgia, particularly in the Atlanta area. Period. I mean, it is loaded.
Yeah.
And,
they all go,
gotta keep them
out, but it's nothing. But it's interesting, you're talking about Calipari too, guys, and that's why you get all these top recruits. You got 5 recruits, right? I'm gonna get somebody right. I got 5 to kind of pick from too, right? You know, so you know, ended up separate, and like you said, ended up being the best out of the 5. You know, so it's just, at least you have a couple of opportunities to make sure that you get a good player from that perspective. So I love those odds of at least getting a couple different recruits, and somebody's going to hit. Somebody's got to hit out of five of them, you know. But and everything mm-hmm. else is gravy after that. So we had North Carolina versus Tennessee. What about that one too, Rob?
Man, Carolina came out, man, just punked Tennessee in the first half tonight, man. I mean, they had 61 points. And, you know, Tennessee is a physical team.
Oop, what happened?
Earbuds died.
I was like, what happened? She was making a point, and it's like cut off. Like, I need Blog Talk.
I was going to say, goddamn
Blog
Talk
went off again. I know, right? Got
an
LA.
Oh, man. That's a little school here, man. I got to hold the phone. Oh, man. But anyway, but yeah, man, they punked Tennessee in the first half, man. The Tennessee is normally a physical team, plays great defense. And you look at Hubert Davis, he kind of still has that Roy Williams philosophy. They want to get up and down the court. They want to run after made baskets. And this year they have a point guard. You know, if you look at historical Roy Williams teams, they had Jock Vaughn in Kansas, Kendall Marshall in North Carolina, Raymond Felton at Carolina as well. And this year they got Elliot Cadeau, who's actually supposed to be a senior in high school. But he was able come out a year earlier, five-star recruit. And, I mean, tonight he had 10 assists running the point. He's not scoring much, but they move R.J. Davis to the shooting guard. Baycott had 22 points, 11 rebounds. Harrison Ingram from Stanford transfer had over 20 points tonight. So it looks so far this season, as Carolina had a down year last year, it looks like this Carolina team is going to compete with Duke for the ACC title. They got a good mixture of young players and a good mixture of veteran players. The only thing about the Carolina team, for some reason, Hubert Davis doesn't like to play more than six or seven guys. I still would like to see him have a little bit more depth. I mean, they got Cormac Ryan come off the bench, transfer from Notre Dame, who's averaging over 12, 13 points, really good shooter. So, I mean, they got off to a great start. They had to hold off Tennessee at the end, though. But they put up 100 points. And so this is that typical Carolina team, fast point guard who can pass the ball, and they got bigs that can run. And that's always been Roy Williams' philosophy, and now transitioning to Hubert Davis.
Well, I think that piece of it, too, is that he's playing a short and vicious, he's playing a higher level of competition. When you see him maybe play some more of the cupcakes or play some more of the bottom feeder, some of those other guys will get some run and get them ready for the stretch run, right? But when you know you come out here again, they all know that these are the games that decide, you know, those higher seeds come March. He said, I'm going to go with six or seven guys I trust right now, and I'm going to do that piece of it. But I want to give that kid from Tennessee a shout-out. He turned his ankle at the end of that second half. But he had, when I stopped watching, he had 37 of the Tennessee 84 points. I think it was like number five. He was actually
sure
a complete fool in that game. I said, good Lord, that boy is balling. And I hate to see him go down with that ankle injury. Yeah, he was actually bad. Yes, he did. So, yeah, North Carolina, good win on them. But, man, he's the one that popped out to me because he just absolutely balled in that ball game.
Yep, he sure did.
Mm-hmm. This next one is for Gary. Gary, Cactus whipped some butt, man. Cowboys, legitimate Super Bowl contenders.
Contender, yes. Front runner, no. I think the only team that I would be concerned with, it isn't Philadelphia. It's the 49ers.
Yeah, it is.
That's the team that I think is the strongest overall team in the NFC.
How do you not be concerned with a team that's 10-1?
Well, you're going to see him after next week.
No, okay.
Then you'll know why. And just like your Philadelphia friend said, they're winning too many of these close games that, you know, very well could have gone another way. They could have had four or five losses. So they have.
Yeah, but it's something to be said. There's something to be said for being able to win close games, though, because it means to me that they don't panic. when things are tight, when they're behind, they have the ability to stay mentally strong and win those games. I understand that. They've won some games, like hitting 60 yards in the rain, Scantling dropping that touchdown, but it still was a minute and 40 seconds, I think, left in that game with Kansas City, so they still have the opportunity, if he catches that, to come back in that game. If I'm being honest, and it's not to get you riled up, I think San Francisco and Philadelphia are on a tier by themselves in the NFC, and then I think Dallas is on the second tier by themselves. People wanted to put Detroit on that tier with them. I think we have found out that Detroit is not on that tier. That defense is way too leaky. We saw what Green Bay did to them in Detroit. We saw them get destroyed by Baltimore. I think they have a good team, but I think Detroit is probably the best team in that third tier. But I would put San Francisco and Philadelphia in tier one by themselves. And Dallas has a chance, like you said, to make a statement against Philadelphia. But you still have the stench of that whooping that San Francisco put on them. And we just have these past years of Dallas not necessarily doing it in the playoffs. That puts up great numbers in the regular season. You got to give him credit. He's playing at an MVP level. Real quiet, like
right now,
credit for he for sure is. You have to give him that credit. And that Dallas defense, I mean, damn, Deron Bland with freaking five damn touchdowns by himself is super impressive. But when I just look at it from top to bottom, in terms of beating tough teams consistently and finding ways to win, I just have to put Dallas. Yeah. I have to put San Francisco and Philadelphia on their own.
Well, until
year.
They do, I agree with you, and that's why I said. That was why my first, you know, statement was, yes, but, you know, there are teams ahead of them. I still don't put Philadelphia. Philadelphia beat them once. Dallas beat themselves in that game. I don't think Philly beat the Cowboys. If you look at that game and really dissect it, you look at the numbers. You know, did Jalen Hurts outplay Dak Prescott? Not even close. It wasn't even close. Go to their stat lines and look at that. He barely threw. He threw for 203 yards or something. Dak threw for, you know, 400 yards. You know, played a great game. The concern that I have with the 49ers, though, is they're the team that knows how to handle Micah Parsons. So that they you know, it doesn't matter where he goes. It seems like they're taking him out of the game.
Yeah.
That's what scares me. Your best defensive player other than, you know, Bland obviously is you know, is Micah Parsons. That's his defensive team. And they have found recipes to keep him away from the quarterback, keep him from hitting the quarterback, this sort of thing.
They run at him.
Until Dallas figures that out, that's the team. That's the only team in the NFC that scares me.
Yeah. Now, and I'll be brief. I think, you know, you guys covered most of it, and I pretty much agree with most of what you guys said. I mean, it's clear that the Eagles and the 49ers are the two best teams in the NFC right now, but I'm going to give Dallas a little bit more credit than probably what you all are giving them and what the national media is giving them, too. And I know most of the national media is saying, hey, they're beating some cupcake teams and things of that nature, but, man, they're blowing these people out. These teams are not even close. And, you know, I tell people all the time, man, the NFL, anybody can be beaten on any given day. You saw the Bears beat the Vikings 12-10 the other night. And, I mean, you any given Sunday, you can
Broncos.
Be beaten in the NFL. You can beat the worst team in the league by 1 point, and, you know, it's still a good win, right? And Dallas has been annihilating people. And I think they are playing better than what most people are giving them credit for. I still will put them behind the Eagles and the Niners right now, but I'm really curious to see how that game goes in a couple of weeks when they play the Eagles. They'll beat the Seahawks tomorrow night, and I think they'll beat them pretty handily.
Easily.
But, you know, I'll want to see that Eagles matchup in a couple of weeks and see how it goes.
So this is – and the part of the reason why I say that, because it's not to take anything away from Dallas. I think Dallas has to have that throw for that, because they don't run the ball the way that San Francisco and Philadelphia can run the ball.
Yep.
And that's why you don't see Jalen Hurts have to throw for 300 yards, because he doesn't have to. He can run for 50, throw for 200, but then he can get those compliments of backs to run the ball as well, but when he needs it, he's got Devontae and A.J. Brown. And that's why I kind of put him on there. The defense, Dallas defense is phenomenal. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. Taking nothing from them. But San Francisco and Philadelphia's ability to run the ball when you know they want to run the ball and they still are able to run the ball 4, 5, 6 yards to carry on you and then set up that play-action pass, it, to me, is the difference between those two and Dallas. And that's what really, to me, is what it comes down to.
I agree. And I agree. Just to kind of add some more to that, just to add icing on the cake. And you got to remember, too, whenever, you know, there's two former Falcons players or coaches for both of these teams, right? So whenever Dan Quinn, you know, he's like, hey, Kyle Shanahan was the guy that I could never stop him. So that's why he hired him to be our offensive coordinator. And so whenever he became the coach, it's the same situation that's happening right now because that dude is still running circles around, you know, Dan Quinn because – it's just tough. It's the same counter tray from the Packers back in the day. You knew it was coming. You couldn't stop it. So that's a situation where, unfortunately, like you said, you're trying to throw different combinations. And Kyle Shanahan, that dude is a certified offensive genius. You can say what he will about his late game management, but that dude is really good at drawing up offensive plays, as you said, Rob. And as you said, JQ, they're going to run the ball. And they run at Michael Parsons, you know, so they don't let him literally get a chance to rush the passer. And then by the time he rushes the passer, they play action. They got George Kittle. They get all these different weapons that kind of keep him off balance, right? So, and that's just a product of the way that Kyle Shanahan can scheme everything.
I'm sorry. And the last thing to that is because they have Trent. And it makes a big difference because if you don't put him on Trent's side, you can slide protection to him. And whoever's on Trent's side, he can take him one-on-one. But when Mike is on his side, then Trent feels like I could take him one-on-one and I could slide it to everybody else. And that's where they have the ability, I think, to your point, Gary, to neutralize Michael more than the other teams have because they have Trent's big ass on the left-hand side.
Yeah,
like, if you line up on Trent, I got him one-on-one. If you line him on the other side, I'm going to take whoever you put on my side away. And then I'm going to give the other four guys the slide of protection over towards him so he's not getting single covered on that side. Not all teams can do that because not everybody has strength. And that's the biggest difference.
Yeah. That is huge. Good call. All right. We're going to get through some predictions really quickly. Obviously, we talked about, you know, Rob, you said Seahawks or Cowboys. We pretty much think that, you know, the Cowboys are going to easily handle the Seahawks. And we talked about that, you know, short week, you know, we talked about the road team, you know. Oh, baby.
Both teams played on Thursday last week, so it's kind of
they
even,
did play on Thursday. They had a little more time. Right, I'll give you that. But still, I'm saying they're both going to like
– I still like
should come out.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I like them. I just don't know if it's going to be a blowout. But I still like the Cowboys to win that game for sure.
Yeah. I think a 13-point victory here. I'm going 27-14 Dallas.
I'm going with 10. Just in the double
digits.
You know, I don't know. I think it's going to be a closer game than that. I think it's going to be a 7-point game.
We got to talk about the Broncos and the Texans. Now, you know, obviously the Broncos had a pretty impressive win versus the Browns, right? And let's talk about Russell Wilson because, you know, he was – pretty much dead in the water, and if you got beat by, you know, the 70, you know, spot they got put up on by Denver, or excuse me, Denver got put up by Miami, and they've had an interesting turnaround. I saw this little Instagram thing where the horse was like, yeah, I'm gonna shoot you in the leg, and then he's shooting the hunter, you know, because basically it's like, yeah, look at me now, I'm basically making a comeback, and the Broncos have been on a nice little tangent here, and you know, the Texans, we talk about C.J. Stroud. We talk about Tank Dell. We talk about, you know, they had a tough loss versus the Jaguars. Yeah, and obviously I'm a huge fan, but this is an interesting game, and it's at the Texans. Rob, what say you for this particular matchup here?
Well, you mentioned it. I mean, the Broncos have won 5 in a row here. They started the season off 1-5. I mean, they had a game where they gave up 70 points. You know, obviously, follow Sean Payton a lot when he was with the Saints, and one of the things I've always been impressed with him is that he never panics regardless of the situation. And you got to give him and Vance Joseph in particular, the defense coordinator, a lot of guys. They made a lot of changes on that defense. A lot of guys that were playing in that game that he gave up 70 points, they benched them. And really, they cut some of them too and got them out of there.
And rightfully so.
So give them credit. And as Andre mentioned, Russell Wilson, 20 touchdowns, 4 INTs, quietly having a pretty solid season, very good season for that matter, as a matter of fact. So the combination of him and Sean Payton is starting to gel, and they're getting on the same page on what each other likes and things of that nature. That being said, I think this is going to be a really good football game. And a lot of these Denver wins have been really close, but like I said, any win in the NFL is a good win. And I think this is going to be a really close football game. I like the Texans to win this one really close. I'm going to go Houston 23-20. I think the combination of C.J. Stroud and the weapons that he has, DeMeco Ryans and that defense as well, I think it's going to be a real competitive game. I like Houston to win by a field goal at home in this one, to end Denver's 5-game win streak.
Wow.
I like Houston to win by 7. And I agree. Think what you have, and getting Stingley back for the Texans is huge. Because when you put Stingley back on that one side, and then you say, hey, I don't know if he's going to follow Sutton, or if he's going to stay on that side and have Sutton, or whether it's Judy on that side. He gives them what the Broncos have in Surtain, right? So, but I just like the way that the Texans' other players as well, you have Tank Dell, okay, if you give him away, Nico still plays good ball. But if you try to take away those two outside guys, and don't, Schultz goes crazy over the middle. And then they've been quietly established a run game with Singletary now, and DeMeco has that defense plan, and you just feel like those shoes are going to drop at some point. Not that they're going to go in the tank, but it's hard to keep winning games consecutively in the NFL, and they won 5. The same way we saw when the Vikings got hot, and then they cooled off a little bit. I think you're going to probably see that kind of happen a little bit with the Broncos. So I'm going to go with the Texans by 7.
Well, I'm also going with the Texans, but I've got to give Sean Payton a lot of credit.
The Flowers? Yeah.
Because, you know, he's taken a quarterback that he knows obviously has limitations. And he's created an offense around this, which has given this quarterback the confidence that he didn't have, you know, prior to that. He kind of lost it last year. You could tell he was just not that guy anymore. Now you're seeing some little bit of swag from Russell, you know, because that offense is around him. He's able to move just a little bit and, you know, give himself a little bit of time, and he's always got that little outlet receiver to throw to. And it's been really neat to watch, you know, Sean Payton. You know, he did that with Drew Brees. Of course, he had Drew Brees as a, you know, one of the best quarterbacks in the league for many years. But as his skill sets changed, he adapted to that, where a lot of coaches don't.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of coaches don't do that. They don't see that. Sean Payton sees that in his players, builds around it. And so I've been very impressed with his coaching ability with this Bronco team. Like win five games like this has been great. I am picking the Texans in this one. I think it's going to be a close game. Go either way, but I'm going with the home team.
Yeah, it could go either way. I think I'm picking the Texans too. It's going to be tough, but, you know, again, Bobby Slowick, he is the offensive coordinator for Texans. He came from the Kyle Shanahan coaching tree, believe it or not. He's another hot coach. We'll talk about that later. But, and again, so that's what we talked about, JQ, as far as having a run game to kind of balance out C.J. Stroud. But then you add Schultz. Then you add, you know, obviously Tank Dell's playing out of his mind. And then that defense is going crazy, too. So it's a lot of things stacked against.
Don't forget about Nico Michigan ass.
Yeah, again, I know. You got a lot of weapons too. But like I said, that's funny how he gave him props. This is going to be an interesting game too, and it could go either way. Honestly, it can really go a coin flip. I mean, it can go. You know, it could be a good play on both sides too. But like I said, I think we all, you know, like the Texans in that situation too. The big game. Could this be an NFC Championship preview? We've got the 49ers. I'm sorry, Gary. We've got the 49ers. They're playing at the Eagles. I'm going to go off. I like the 49ers in this game. We talked about Trent Williams, the big boy, big cat over there. You know, we talked about the Eagles winning a lot of close games in this instance, too. You know, that 49er run game is always going to travel well. You know, again, I'm going to pick them by 7. But like I said, this is a situation where it's going to be huge. Really, really good game, if you will, too. So that's me from that perspective. 27-20.
Yeah, I'm going with the Eagles in this game. I'm going with the Eagles at
home.
Okay. I think the link is going to be crunked, and I think the Philadelphia is going to be really animated to play this football game and try to prove a lot of people wrong. I think JQ said it best earlier. You got to give them a lot of credit for a lot of these close wins that they've been able to pull out. We said it on last week's show, right, that I think we all agreed that we thought the Eagles were going to beat the Bills, but we thought it was going to be a competitive game, and that's what we got in that game, right? And I think we're going to see the same this week, and I just think Philadelphia just finds a way to win a lot of these games, right? Whether it's from the defensive side of the football making the play in a game, or whether it's Jalen Hurts, or whether it's A.J. Brown, or whether it's Devontae Smith, or whether it's DeAndre Swift, right? They may get Dallas Goedert back, the tight end, as well this weekend. And they also have a good physical offensive line, defensive line, too. I think they're going to be ready to play this weekend. I think 49ers are going to come in and ready to play, too. But I think the Eagles are going to win this game by a field goal. I'm going to go Philadelphia 24, San Fran 21. I think it's going to be a physical football game. I think the link is going to be crunk, and Philadelphia fans are going to be crazy. And I think Philadelphia pulls this game out.
Go ahead, Gary. I go last.
Well, I do agree with the score, but I think it's going to be the 49ers that pull it out. And there are going to be a lot of drunk Eagles fans because they're going to be drowning their sorrows with their second loss. And not only that, the Eagles are going to be going on a two-game losing streak because they're going to lose to the 49ers, and then they're going to lose to the Cowboys at Texas, in Texas.
Right.
So I do agree with your score. I'm just flip-flopping it.
I'm going to take the 49ers by four. And we talked about it before. San Francisco, I believe, played Thanksgiving night where you've got the Eagles playing Sunday into an overtime game. So they get a little bit of a rest advantage on the Eagles, that for one. For two, that loss last year really, really sits with San Francisco. Like, they don't feel like they had a real chance in that game because they were down to Christian McCaffrey taking snaps under center because they lost all their quarterbacks. And sometimes that revenge factor can kill you, but I think for them, they kind of probably had this circle. They've gotten healthy at the right time, and I think they're going to go in there and win. And I also feel like the things that Philadelphia has been able to do to other teams where they have been able to fall behind and come from behind on them, I just don't think they can follow that same recipe against San Francisco and that defense and what San Francisco can do to them. They can't come out slow and get down by 10 to 12, 13 points to San Francisco and come back and win like they could do to Kansas City, to a Buffalo. I don't think that works against San Francisco. So when I put that in there with them having a, you know, less rest in San Francisco and that chip on San Francisco's shoulder from what happened last year in the NFC title championship game, I'm going to pick San Francisco even going the wrong Philadelphia and to try to make a statement win because everybody would be buried there on them. Robin didn't even want to put them in the top five. Like, they heard that. And they got healthy, and they out there. I think they're on a revenge tour, right? I really think they are. And I think that continues into Philadelphia.
Well, the only thing I would say on this is, if it comes down to the Eagles, you know, fourth and one.
Oh, yeah.
Getting the first down. Goddamn Tush push they've got going on. Man, they've got that.
Yeah, no, you can't stop that.
Yeah.
And no
they
team can stop them.
On 4-3.
Yeah, they did it for the other day. It made it look easy.
No, I mean,
down.
Right. I mean, and I was talking with a friend of mine, and he was saying, and these other teams tried that against the Eagles, and they get stopped half the damn time. And it's because the Eagles, they're playing against their offense, and they're going against the best damn team at that play. I mean, they've done that on their own damn 25-yard line, you know.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Because they're
five,
so sure they're going to get it. You know, and other teams, they're not going to do that shit, you know.
Yep.
Yeah, no, they don't have
Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts has the lower body strength, too, that I think helps with that push, too. And,
100%.
So,
yeah, he was squatting 600 in Oklahoma.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I think the offensive, I mean, the players around him has a lot to do with it, but I think the reason why it's worked so well is because of what Jalen Hurts can do as well. So I think he's a major factor in why that tush push works so well.
Yeah, nobody's going to go through the lower area like Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts is damn near a track star. I mean, that dude is crazy strong.
But mm-hmm. I've seen them get 6 yards on that thing.
Yeah, because nobody wants no part of it. Jason Kelce coming right down the middle of the ass. Nobody wants no part of it.
They can convert 4 and 3s on that baby.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's stupid.
I hate it.
Yep. Good stuff. That's hilarious.
Hey, Trey, right. Can we do the prediction for the college football before we get off?
You want to do that? You want to do it now? You want to hold off on the college and the coaches? Yeah, that's fine. Let's do this. Let's do this. We can do that. Let's move on. All
right.
Yeah. So number 5, Oregon at number 3, Washington. Let's go ahead and kick that on off. Go ahead. Woo! Big time.
Ooh. Go ahead, Rob.
I like
Oregon.
Yeah.
Woo! I know.
I'm taking Oregon.
They struggled with Washington State. Woo! Independence. I don't know. That was interesting, man, to see him. And I was excited to see him play. And I was like, what the French toast is happening with that? You know, but we talk about, you know, obviously rivalry games are close. And woo!
Yeah, Washington really has been playing on fire if you really go back and look at these last 3 to 4 games, right? Well, it was Oregon State, it was Washington State, and Michael Penix Jr. has kind of fallen off a little bit, right, in some of these games. And I think he's kind of slowly falling off the Heisman trail here, too, unless he has, like, a monster game this weekend against Oregon. I think that's the advantage that Penix and Nix have in the Heisman race is that if one of these two win and have a monster game, that could possibly propel them. I think if the vote was done today, I think Jaden Daniels wins the Heisman. But I think one of those guys has a chance to propel Jaden with a monster game and win the Pac-12 championship this weekend, right? And no, but I like Oregon. Oregon's playing better. They're playing better on both sides of the ball. Bo Nix has been playing well, phenomenal, throwing the ball accurately, running it well. Troy Franklin's been playing well on the perimeter. Their defensive line has been playing well here of late as well. So, no, I like Oregon, and I wouldn't be surprised if they win the game by at least 10 points.
Mm-hmm. I agree. It was a close game in Seattle. Now you take them on a neutral field with a team that's an Oregon team that's been playing much better over the last month than the Washington team has. And, again, they got that chip on their shoulder where they just barely lost that game in Seattle. I like Oregon. He's been playing a better brand of football here lately.
Yep. And I think the winner of this game is a shoe-in for the college football playoff, too. So,
oh,
man,
hell yeah.
Practically for a berth in the playoff, too.
This is a playoff game.
Mm-hmm.
I would agree with that. I'm going with Oregon in this game. I think they should have won the last game. They didn't. But they'll prove it this week.
Yeah.
And I agree. I think it'll be a 10-point game.
I'm Oregon all the way.
Not taking anything away from Washington. Right. They've had a phenomenal season.
100%.
State at number 7, Texas. Go ahead, Rob. Woo! Another one.
Come on,
I like Texas in this game. I like Oklahoma State is another one that's just been kind of squeaking out some wins of late. I think Texas finally. You know, one thing about Texas this year, they jumped out with some big leads against some teams, then they had to hold on to the end. In this past game, I think they were playing Texas past weekend. They finally dominated from beginning to end. I think they won like 58-7. And if you're a Texas fan, you got to be encouraged by that going to the Big 12 championship, that they were able to, you know, not just tail off and hold on at the end. I know Texas is not a great team, but Oklahoma State just kind of just barely got into this championship game. So I just think Texas is more of a complete team. Quinn Ewers is back. They got Davey Worthy on the perimeter as well. I just think they're more of a complete game here. I think this could easily be another 2-touchdown win for Texas.
I don't trust Mike Gundy in a damn thing. And that says a whole lot when I don't trust Texas either. But that dude ain't going
to
win.
Come and talk to me.
Yeah, man. No, hell no. I'm going to go with Texas. I just think Texas has the better athletes. They're playing better than Oklahoma State, like you said. And this might be the Sark's best chance, you know, before he heads to the SEC. And I think he knows that. So if you look at him and put out all the stops, all the wrinkles, in this game to try to get them into the college football playoff this year. So I'm going to go with Texas.
Nice.
I think Texas is going to win this game. Absolutely.
All right. We got a big one. Number 1, Georgia at number 8, Alabama. This is a big one. We know Georgia's getting some people back. is Brock Bowers going to play? Another interesting situation, too. But go ahead, Rob. What about this one?
I still like Georgia here, but I think this is going to be a competitive football game, though. I mean, Alabama just got too many good players on their roster, too many good NFL prospects, particularly on their defensive side of the ball and particularly on their offensive line. So I think this is going to be a physical football game. I think it's going to be close for 3.5 quarters, and I think Georgia just find a way to win by maybe a touchdown at the end of the game here. So I'm going to go Georgia 27-20, but I think this game is going to be a competitive, physical football. Nick Saban and the Crimson Tide are going to have a plan. So I look for this to be a smash-mount SEC football kind of game with Georgia squeaking it out in the end.
I agree.
I agree with that, but I would like to see Georgia just pound them just so I could see the reaction on the sideline of Nick Saban throwing a fit and yelling at his players. It's a simple thing in life.
Man, I don't even know if I want to watch this game, because if I watch it, I might find myself rooting for Alabama.
Don't watch it, Ben.
No, you won't.
No, I think I've gotten that much hate for Georgia now, too.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. All right. This is going to be – I'm going to go to Jay Cuber for this one, because we know he's going – he's never going to go for Michigan. Number 2, Michigan at number 16, Iowa. Iowa, right, Jay Cuber, Iowa, yeah.
Come on, man. Iowa's just going to score 13 points. That's not going to work against Michigan. Listen, I would love Iowa to win this game, but that's just not going to happen.
Yeah,
I'm going to be on here and be objective. I mean, they're going to be Iowa. Iowa playing in that Big Ten West. You can play that kind of defense in the Big Ten West and get away with that. That's not going to work against J.J. McCarthy and Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards and that Michigan defense. So this might get out of hand in the second half. Michigan wins that game. As much as it burns my tongue and my lips to say that out loud, they're going to win that game.
Yeah. Totally agree. Yeah, I mean, Michigan lost one of their starting offensive linemen, but they'll still dominate this football game on both sides of the field. As JQ mentioned, I mean, Iowa struggles to score. I mean, watching them play offenses is like, man, like Gary said the other day, you'd rather watch paint dry than watching Iowa play offense. Man, that is just pathetic. So, I mean, they may not even score 10 points in this game. I can see Michigan winning this game 31-10.
Big time.
I can see them winning it bigger than that.
Listen, Iowa had the lowest over-under in like 25, 30 years from Vegas in the game, and they still hit the under. That's all you need to know.
I can't.
It's true.
Hold on. Uh-oh.
Right. Ladies and gentlemen, you guys can have a meeting. That's the end of our live portion of the night. Stay tuned and click on the same link to get the rest of the show. We still got a little bit more to cover in the OT portion. East Coast, Miami, all the way up to Boston. It's going to be 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on next Wednesday night. Central Time Zone, New Orleans all the way up to Chicago. It's going to be 10 p.m. Central Time Zone for you all next week. New Mexico State, getting ready to talk about y'all, Mountain Time Zone. That's 9 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. How about the Aggies? 10-2, 2 years in a row. Man, they barely won 17 games in the last 15 years prior to that. And I got 20 wins practically in 2 years. So shout out to the state of New Mexico. And on the West Coast, it's going to be 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Oakland, San Francisco, we want to hear from y'all. Is the Warriors era over? It might be.
Wow.
Listen, KJ Jefferson, Riley Leonard, please contact Ryan Day. We need a quarterback. Please come to Ohio State. Thank you very much. I appreciate y'all for listening to the show. But if I can get one of those two dudes to come next year, we have another chance at it, but not with Kyle McCord. So please, Ryan Day, go make it happen. Go make it happen. Good night, y'all.
Word on the
Yeah, I think he likes Notre Dame. Riley Leonard likes Notre Dame from what I'm hearing. That's what I'm hearing.
Riley Leonard, word on the street is that Notre Dame is a huge favorite to get him. But also Texas A&M, and he might fire. I mean, he might follow Mike Echo to Texas A&M as well. And I hear Auburn is in the mix. But for some reason, the rumor is for some reason, they want to play for Hugh Freeze in that offense. You know, to fit their skill set. And
they don't want to win.
But for some reason, they're saying KJ Jefferson wants to stay in the SEC, and that Auburn, Mississippi State, and South Carolina are the early favorites.
What the fuck? You can go to Ohio State in the, even next year when they go to division. Then you could beat USC, you could beat UCLA, you're going to play Michigan again, but you have a chance to be undefeated and a chance to be get a bye and win the Big Ten. Why in God's name is you going to go deal with Texas A&M and deal with all that foolishness or go to Mississippi fucking State? What is wrong with these two people? Who's a violent now? What?
NIL. There you go. NIL, JQ.
The Ohio State's got the second biggest athletic department budget behind Texas.
I don't know.
They said we're not doing that cold weather. That's all I got. Because nothing else makes sense.
That's interesting. That's interesting. Really quick, let's wrap these up, and I want to talk about really quick the NFL assistance. But I was going to talk. So New Mexico State, Liberty. Did we talk about that? Did we get the winner for that?
No, we had those two left.
New Mexico?
We had those last two left.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Good. Go ahead, real quick.
I'm gonna go with New Mexico State. If they can beat Auburn, I think they can beat Liberty.
There it is.
They only beat Auburn. They beat the brakes off of Auburn.
I'm going Liberty in this Malik matchup. Willis Liberty's averaging over 40 points a game. So I'm going to go Liberty and beating
New
Mexico State.
I'm going to hype them up and then take Liberty.
I'm going to hype them up New Mexico State and then take Liberty.
There you go.
That was pretty funny.
You got to play that game sometime,
that
man.
That's funny.
I'm going with the goat. I'm taking Liberty, too. I don't know a damn thing about them, but I'm taking them.
Yeah, that's funny. Shout out to New Mexico
Liberty's
State.
Liberty's undefeated, too.
New Mexico. Come on, let's go. Let's go to New Mexico State. Let's pull it off, man. Do what you got, man. Louisville, we're pushing Louisville at number four, Florida State. You know, give a shout out to, who is it, Tate? Who's the guy that rapped Tate? Rodden Miller, whatever his name was. He's actually a third-year junior, right, that ran for, he was taken care of in Jordan Davis's speed. He did a good job. Now, granted, the defensive line was just obliterated for it at the time. So I think we'll do the same thing to Louisville. In this instance, you know, they got a lot of weapons. We talked about Keon Coleman, the wide receiver for Florida State. I just like how Florida State is playing right now. And, you know, even though that was a huge loss to Jordan and Travis, I think that, you know, they have their business against Louisville. That's me.
I think Florida State's going to win this game. But I think it's going to be extremely close. I think Louisville is going to line in this game. Yep. Louisville has been able to score some points, and Florida State's got a really good defense. But Louisville is a team that's been able to score a lot of points this year. A lot of games they've scored over 30 points. So I think they're going to make this game extremely competitive. This is the game that I think that Texas, Alabama, Ohio State are going to be clearly watching, because this is their way. I mean, it'll take a huge upset for Iowa to beat Michigan, right? And, you know, we know the winner of the Pac-12 championship is going to be in. And there's probably a good chance the winner of the SEC championship is going to be in, right? So this is that game that probably gives Ohio State and Texas a shot of possibly getting into the playoff, right? But I think in the end, Florida State's going to squeak this one out. I think it's going to be 27-24. But I would not be surprised if Louisville win this game. I really wouldn't. You know, I know they lost Kentucky last week. I mean, they dominated Notre Dame this season when they played them. And so I would not be surprised if Louisville win this game. But I think Florida State squeaks it out.
This is the difference. Louisville likes to go get those recruits from South Florida that don't go to Florida State, Miami. Right? So they're going to see a level – you're going to see the talent level just in terms of pure athletes, like you said, especially Florida State on the defensive side of the ball. I think they can beat Louisville and overcome Tate. Tate does not have to do a whole bunch against Louisville. Louisville's not going to see the level of athletes that Florida State is going to throw at them. Miami was the closest, and you saw how close that game was. And the Kentucky one, I just think Louisville just – I don't know what happened in that game. But I think Florida State's talent level, just the athletes they're going to throw at them, is going to be too much for Louisville to overcome. Tate, Jordan Travis, Gary, Andre, whoever's playing quarterback, they still win that game against Louisville.
They'd have to run out there and catch my 13-yard bomb.
13-yard bomb.
That's hilarious. Really quickly, that's good, Gary.
You're giving,
you, really
you're giving
quickly,
yourself too much credit
you.
There with 13 yards.
Come on, Rob.
We're going to wrap this up really quickly. I want to talk about the top assistants because there's some interesting names here. Ben Johnson, the Lions offensive coordinator, what he's doing with Jared Goff has been pretty amazing.
Yeah.
There's been some rumors that him going to the Chargers because, you know, obviously they're going to get rid of Brandon Staley. The Chargers and the Panthers now, but obviously what's happening with, you know, Justin Herbert, you know, obviously Brandon Staley was more of a defensive coach, so the Chargers like, yo, we got to get an offensive guy in there because they clearly got the quarterback. So that's going to be an interesting situation. It may be a bidding war between the Panthers and the Chargers for his services, but he's the really getting a lot of pub as far as him. Aaron Glenn, the defensive coordinator for the Lions, I think he's going to be a nice eventual head coach at some point too. So obviously look at what he's coming, you know, we're going to look at a couple of things, Chargers, Panthers, Commanders, you know, Raiders, some situations for that. Bears, we talk about later.
The Raiders
really keep
that damn Antonio Pierce.
They could. They better. But we'll talk about that. What is it? Ibiro, he's the defensive coordinator for the Panthers. He's another name that's out there. Your guy from the Bengals, JQ
Lou.
Sweet Lou. He's an older coach at 57, but at this juncture, I think he's going to be a good opportunity for him. And then very, very, very down on the list, I've got Bobby Slowick. He's the Texas offensive coordinator. I talked about him earlier. He's from the Kyle Shanahan tree, but he's probably further down on the list. Those are the some guys that I think and hopefully Eric Bieniemy gets a shot to in this juncture too, because he's still holding on with the Commanders. He fits in somebody's cornflake.
I'll tell you something, Dre. Bobby Slowick's name may not be near the bottom of the list. He may be near the top, and I'll tell you why. You know, you look at Sean McVay and a lot of his disciples, they got hired for head coaching jobs pretty quickly, right? And you're going to see the same thing with Kyle Shanahan, right, and the success that he's having as a head coach, former offensive coordinator. So Bobby Slowick is a sleeper for these head coaching jobs because that's what these teams are looking for. They're looking for the next Kyle Shanahan just like they were looking for the next Sean McVay, right? So he's a guy that I would put up, maybe I'm not saying he's the top guy, but I would put him up a little bit closer to the top than you would maybe think. And then when you look at what he's done with a rookie quarterback this year, rookie wide receiver, and that team and what they've done in the first year. So I would put his name, a little bit higher up on the list. Eric Bieniemy, do I think he deserves a shot? Absolutely. So we'll see what happens. I mean, even though the Commanders are 4-8, I mean, they got a top 10 passing offense. Sam Howell, fifth round draft pick. He's gonna pace that 4,700 yards passing this year. Sam Howell. Yeah. Exactly.
Only 70 sacks.
Yeah. So, Brian Flores, his Minnesota's defense is ranked one of the top 8 defenses in the league. You would think he's going to get another shot. I mean, this last season with the Dolphins, they did go 9-7.
He sure deserves a shot.
Yeah.
He sued them, and that's a team that I think they're going to hold that against them. I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's my only caveat. It's the Brotherhood. They're gonna close
right. On the last one because he was doing.
I didn't say you're wrong, but when you sue one of the 32, the other 31 are gonna be like, we our ownership group that's the Brotherhood is gonna take a Maverick to step outside of that. I'm not saying he's not deserving. It's just that piece of it may hold him back.
Yeah.
But
I got a question.
How do you get a head coach? He wasn't totally blackballed out of the league like Colin Kaepernick was.
True.
But, you know,
but one thing to be an assistant to be a head coach. And that's a big difference in that. I just want to know how you go have one win as a defensive coordinator and you be a high assistant coach. Like, that's wow. And I'm not hating on that dude from Carolina, but for real? Like, they got one win.
No.
You said the Carolina defensive coordinator, didn't you?
Yeah, yep. He was on there.
I can't understand that either.
I'm sitting here like
he was on the list. He was on the list though because I think he was a good disciple whenever he left because I think he was at Denver before, right? And Denver defense played well, and then he goes over to the Panthers. Like, whoa, what the hell? So again, are you giving him a mulligan? Is it a situation where it's like, man, just the offense was that bad? You got to lose the quarterback because he still was a good talent too.
Yeah,
that's hard to tell to your fan base. That's hard to tell to your fan base. We hired a defensive coordinator from a team that might win two games to be our head coach. That's tough.
Yeah, it is. But Vance Joseph, same thing. You're like ten more games earlier. You're like, this dude needed to get the hell out of here and look at the turnaround. So it could happen.
Yeah,
so,
and it took a 5-game winning streak. So let's Carolina get hot.
Yeah. Fair. But he has more history than
the guy. I'm surprised you didn't mention Andre. Is Dan Quinn? I mean, the job he's doing as defensive coordinator. You know, I think he's going to probably get another shot at some point as a head coaching job.
He's a better coach than a coach.
Yeah, I agree with somebody. It always takes two or three times, like Josh McDaniels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got to let that dude go.
Yep.
But I'm with you. But you know,
And Eric Glenn is an intriguing guy, too. But he used to be the secondary coach for the Saints under Sean Payton. And, you know, when Dan Campbell got that job, you know, Dan Campbell hired him as a defensive coordinator. And Sean Payton was extremely high on Eric Glenn. Matter of fact, he used to let Eric Glenn run the practices a lot. And so he was really high on Eric Glenn, you know, making that progression into a head coach someday. So, I mean, he's definitely a guy that's going to get a lot of support around the league, too.
Shit me. He better tighten that goddamn secondary up. If they're out there just getting destroyed, he better tighten it up before the end of this year starts.
Okay, so who are you going to bring in? You're New England. Kraft fires Belichick. Who do you bring in?
It's just I don't know where Robert Kraft's head is. Does he want to get so far away from Bill Belichick that he stays away from the Bill Belichick tree? And anybody that knows what the Patriot way is, or does he say, hey, I just need a younger version of the Patriot way? That's why I'm like, I struggle with that one in terms of where his mindset is, right? Like, is he really wanting to make the fresh start with it, or does he just kind of want like a younger version of Bill that knows the way they do business up in Foxborough? So I don't have a person, honestly, because I just don't know how to pay Robert Kraft right now.
Yeah.
I don't have a person, but when you look at the way they've been struggling on the offensive side of the ball, I would be surprised if he go after one of these young offensive-minded head coaches, right, or coordinators, like Andre mentioned, the Ben Johnsons of the world or, you know, one of those guys or Bobby Slowick or somebody like that. You know, I wouldn't, you know, maybe that's the direction you go and get into. They're going to get a new, at the rate they're going, they're going to get either Drake May, Caleb Williams, or Jaden Daniels, right? And so you're going to want an offensive-minded, young offensive-minded head coach to come in there and take that organization in another direction. So if they do move on from Belichick, to me that would be the obvious choice if I was the owner of the Patriots.
But see, my dude from Washington promote Bill O'Brien, and I could never, and that wouldn't shock me. That's why I'm like, I don't know which way he's going to go.
Josh McDaniels. There's a lot of shit out there, man.
Yeah.
You don't know which direction you're going to go. He may go with something that's more familiar with that, with the Patriot way or something like that, too. So you never really know what's going to happen.
Right.
And then you look at the success that Bobby Slowick is having as with a rookie quarterback. I mean, if you're a team that's up there near the top of the draft and is going to get a rookie quarterback, I mean, you got to give him some strong consideration.
Rob, I'm going to need you to pump the brakes because right now, Bobby Slowick, I want him for the Falcons in the future. Let him get more developed. Let him get another year in his belt with the Texans.
Yeah.
Let us get rid of
Arthur. I might need him in New Orleans.
Let him come
in.
Shut the hell up, JQ. Get the hell out of here, man. This is what we were promised, man. Hold on. You're my boy. You're my boy, JQ. But let me have my little rant here, right? Number one. Yes. We're going to get it. But the offense that we were promised, this is not the offense that we're getting right now, right? You promised me some type of version of the Kyle Shanahan offense, right? You are not running that offense at all. And the sad thing is, if Kyle Shanahan has a weapon that we have, we'd be a lot better on offense because he knows how to scheme. a Bijan Robinson. He knows how to scheme. That dude can scheme some shit out of his ass, you know. So right now, we need somebody that knows how to run the ball, not like, you know, use Kyle Pitts as a decoy. What the hell is that? No. I was talking to a lot of fans at the game this past weekend,
and I, you know, Bijan Robinson is a beast, right? We all know that. He's probably one of the top two or three running backs in the game right now as a rookie. But at some point, you guys just realize that Kyle Pitts is probably not who we thought he was going to be, and he's probably not the coaches. And because he hasn't done it, right? It was his third year in the league. At three seasons, this is when you realize who you have as a player, right? And he's a guy. Now, Drake May, I think, is still a really good prospect and really be a good receiver, but this is his third year. At this point, this is his third year in the league. You got to start wondering, is Kyle Pitts actually that guy, as opposed to stop blaming the coaches?
Sure.
Because, like you, I sat around a lot of Falcons fans at the game, and they all want Arthur Smith fired, too. And it's the same thing I heard at the game. But some of that's probably not Arthur Smith. It's probably Kyle Pitts.
But the thing about it is, I'm not saying you're wrong. And I'm going to tie it up so we can get off here. I'm not saying you're wrong. But when's the last time that a coach won their division and got fired in the same offseason? Like, if he wins that division, I don't see how you then go back and fire him. Like, he has a strong chance to win that division, given the injuries that the Saints have right now with Lattimore being hurt, the top three wide receivers being banged up right now, Derek Carr being Derek Carr. Like, if the Falcons mess around and win that division, how do you – I just have never seen an owner be like, you know what, Saints win the division title, pass your shit up. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's the piece of it, I say.
Yeah, that's a fair statement, and I'll give you credit. I mean, that's not – you know, again, that's Mitchell thinking. We know this is just, you know, me just kind of, you know, on the soapbox. We got really lucky because I was texting, you know, Michael Thomas was hurt. He was the Falcon killer. Marshawn Lattimore was gone. You lost freaking Chris Olave. I mean, what the hell? You didn't have nobody to throw to except Juwan, you know, Johnson. That's all you had for the Saints. I mean, and, you know, Alvin Kamara was trying to do whatever. But we got lucky. We got lucky to win that game, you know. And I get, you know, again, any team can come off and do whatever you got to do, you know. Desmond Ridder almost then gave it away again, but, you know, he played well enough to kind of pull it off. And then, like you said, it's just a situation where we're looking at this like, man, I don't know. I have no clue what this team looks like, honestly. And it's just, Rob, if you go back in the hindsight is 2020, right? Because if you look at the number four pick, you had Justin Fields right there, but yet still we're like, you know what? I'm going for the tight end, right? And you know, almost a glorified. I would have taken Jamar Chase over Pitts, but still, that's me, you know. But still, you can look back and be like, well, damn, all the problems are definitely exasperated now because it's like,
y'all drafted Kyle Pitts as a quarterback because y'all still thought Matt Ryan was that dude that at that time.
Okay, I'm gonna get that too.
I never said that too, but that's a whole other conversation. But you know,
back in the Falcons at that time.
But he wasn't.
He was still 37 years old at that time. They didn't think of that. Damn, stop it! Just starting trouble.
I'm sorry, right, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to take all the commentary, man. But I hope everything is good. It was just a situation where just trying to like get it out of our system, if you will, for sure, man. But but Rob, I hear you, man, about the book. Like, I'm hoping that there's some type of Kyle Shanahan disciple that will come in and kind of save us and, you know, really, like, elevate the run game because that's what we need, man. And until we get that, I don't even know what the hell is happening right now. So it's just,
could you guys explain one thing before we get off the phone? You guys, several of you mentioned the Patriot Way. What is the Patriot Way? What does that mean?
That's a great question. Only the people that do know what it means.
The Brady Way. I remember Belichick before he had Brady. Now Belichick after Brady. Well, so what's
the Patriot Way? The Tom Brady, but they refused to call it Tom Brady, so they're still going on the Patriot Way. And that's why I said I can't give them a coach, because I don't know if people would say, you know what, that era's over. Let's do something different. Or if he was like, well, that era got us six chips, so I'm going to try to keep extending it. I just don't know where Robert Kraft is. Only they know what the Patriot way is. I guess it's
I know where
everybody
he's
at. Uh oh. Bye. Okay. Okay.
He's at the massage parlor down in Miami.
He's
by 75. He's going about 95.
Watch that. J.J. McCartney's on the Patriots. Watch that, man. I'm telling you, man. J.J. McCartney, he looks like a Patriot quarterback, Rob. I'm telling you, man. I'm telling you. Michigan,
man.
Tom Brady. I'm telling
the
you, man.
Look like
oh, hell no. All right, bye. 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 Okay,
the
yep.
The Patriots look like they're going to have a top five pick, man. And if they cannot take J.J. McCartney over Caleb Williams, Drake May, or Jayce Daniels.
He did that just get me going. I'm off the phone. I'm done talking now.
All right, guys.
I love y'all.
Right,
I'll see y'all later. Next week.
Good,
bye.